I'm Fresh, and you are now listening to The Breaks Podcast. These are highlights from our Saturday night hip-hop show on KUTX 98.9 in Austin, Texas. My co-host Confucius Jones and I are native Austinites, and we love talking hip-hop. Texas hip-hop, hip-hop history, and what's going on right now. And just so you know, the opinions expressed in the podcast are our own and do not necessarily reflect the position of KUTX Austin.
We here to take over the airways.
Happy Juneteenth, Austin. I guess this is our Juneteenth celebration episode. You know, we come in a day after, but we still celebrate. We still emancipated. You know how it is.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we're free somewhat. Yeah, you know, happy Juneteenth to you, Fresh.
Happy Juneteenth to you too, brother Confucius.
It's always, you know, Juneteenth in Austin's always like been going to it all my life. It's always interesting to me that Juneteenth is not like nationally celebrated, because in Austin it's a huge thing, at least on the east side. So I don't think I was probably an adult when I realized it's not like a national holiday. And by adult, I mean I was working, realized I had to go to work on the same day.
Yeah. I think I probably was an adult probably like by the time I hit college, I realized that it's not a federal holiday. It's a nationally recognized holiday, but that means diddly squat.
Yeah. But, you know, my memories of Juneteenth, you know, going to, we used to go to my church, Greater Mount Zion, with my school, my grandmother. And we'd sit on the, you know, curb and, you know, watch the parade. And I just remember we'd be in hot as hell.
Every year.
God, it's hot.
My grandmother used to stay off of Pennsylvania, and the parade would come up, would come down, what is that, Chicane in Pennsylvania would be the intersection, right up the street from GMZ. And we would just walk from my grandmother's house up to a street to Pennsylvania, Chicane, and pick our spot and just sit there and sweat and just wait for them to throw candy.
Yeah, throw candy.
That was the highlight of the parade.
I used to like seeing the guys on the horses walk.
Yeah, the walk Buffalo Soldiers.
Yeah, the Buffalo Soldiers. But I saw some, you know, I would go out there with my grandmother, but, you know, God rest her soul. But she wanted to go so early. I'm like, yo, the parade don't start till like 11. What are we out doing out here at 8 in the morning? But she wanted to be out there with all the old friends and sit out there and talk and gossip. I'd end up leaving about an hour into it. Like, let me just walk around and meet my people.
Yeah, my family would be like, like you said, parade doesn't start till like 11, maybe 10. They trying to be out there at 8. Like, man, yeah, we got like 2 hours. What are we doing up here? We got to pick our spots so nobody won't take our spot. There's plenty of room on this sidewalk, man.
They want to sit, you know, because people, my grandma had the same spot for years. That's what they want, their spot.
Yeah.
Like, they want to be able to sit because all their friends are going to be there. And I'm like, bro, I'm trying to walk. I walk to the Millennium. I'm like, I'm gone. Like, I'm not going to do this all day. I'm not going to sit out here in the same spot all day.
I would just get my candy and go. But, I mean, I'm going back to the house. It's hot. I'm going back to sit in the AC.
Yeah, for real. But it's dope, man. You know, especially everything going on, Juneteenth has, you know, a little more importance than years past. So, you know, I'm interested. It sucks, though, because of COVID. You know, COVID's still a thing as well. Mm-hmm. So the Juneteenth celebration, while I still think it's going to be one in Austin and be some across, you know, the country, it's not going to be as big as it could have been because of COVID, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, that is unfortunate. I was looking forward to celebrating Juneteenth outside in seeing the city celebrate it. But when I say the city, I mean black people in the city, not the city of Austin itself, because the last few years they've done a piss poor job. But I was looking forward to that, but COVID hit and then things, you know, turned the way that they did. But with the events as of late, it seemed like it's sparked and reignited some pride in people, and they really want to celebrate and really out to try to celebrate Juneteenth with a bang.
So, you know, I'm going to just jump right into it. Last week we spoke about, you know, Lil Wayne and him having an opinion on everything that's going on with the protesting and the, you know, and the police brutality. And we mentioned an artist as well, like, hey, you know, we'd like you, but we don't want to hear your opinion on it. That artist was J. Cole. And J. Cole, I want to say, what day was it? Wednesday.
Wednesday. It was Wednesday.
Wednesday released a song called Snow on the Bluff, where he spoke about everything that's going on. And I woke up and saw he put out a song. You know, normally when J. Cole puts out stuff, you're like, oh, lit. J. Cole got a song. But the internet was just like, that ain't it. So there's a Chicago-based female rapper named No Name, who's now mostly an activist. And a lot of people felt like J. Cole was throwing shots at her. In the song, J. Cole mentioned how sometimes activists can kind of act too stuck up, and they talk down to other people who are not as educated as them. And he basically mentioned that it was a female activist who sounded very condescending, and she needed to educate him, and, you know, basically kind of like watch your tone type thing. Granted, that's a small part of the song. The rest of the song was fine to me, but it was just that small part there that kind of stuck out and set the internet ablaze. A great skill to have in life is knowing when to read the room. It's probably not the best time to try to be critical or tell a black woman what they should be doing at this time. J. Cole tweeted that he meant every word that he said, and that he also didn't read much. He was just learning, which is mind-boggling to me. Yeah. What are your thoughts on it?
I got to take it back a little bit at the initial release of the song. I saw it in a group chat, and I and another one of my friends are big J. Cole fans, so when I saw the song in the group chat, I was excited, because I was like, oh, it's new J. Cole. Oh, it's a J. Cole song, and I know this is going to be about the struggle, and I like when J. Cole talks about the struggle. And then I listened to it, and on my initial listen to it, I didn't like it. I still don't really care for the song, not because of the content. I just didn't really care for the production and the flow on the track. But it's J. Cole, so I took it, and I was happy. When J. Cole decides to rap, I'm happy for it. Like you were saying, there were some points made in there, and I even tweeted that J. Cole said some things that I had been saying for years that kind of fell on deaf ears. So it just let me know sometimes it's not the message, but it's the messenger. Sometimes you say things and people just don't necessarily want to hear those things from you. But Jermaine has to learn to read the room a little better. Like, this isn't the time to be telling any black person, let alone a black woman, about her tone and trying to tone police her. Like, and my whole thing with it, I sat it up and I thought about it yesterday. You clearly felt a way, and you clearly felt like she was talking about you. So you went on ahead and recorded this record and put these thoughts on wax. But like, if you felt like you were doing all that you could with your platform, you put out the songs, you would donate money, you were dedicating shows and albums and tours to families who were victims of police brutality, and you were out there in the streets marching with people at Ferguson, you were out there marching in Minneapolis. Now, why are you hurt? Why are your feelings hurt? Like, just be quiet. Like, as I always say, a hurt dog hollers. Like, you clearly felt a way about something. You clearly felt that you weren't doing enough. And if you weren't doing enough, I felt like that was something that could have been talked about privately amongst him and allegedly No Name. Because if it was No Name, you're not going to tell me J. Cole can't get her number. He just had Saba and Smino on the Dreamville album, who were really cool with No Name. So you could have hit up one of those guys and said, hey, one of y'all have No Name's number. I want to talk to her. I'm trying to get in touch with her. Can y'all let her know that I'm trying to get in touch with her? Have her hit me up. Or hit her on Instagram. You said you saw all of this on Instagram. Why you just couldn't have that, hash that out in a DM conversation? Like, I didn't think those thoughts needed to be put down on wax. But he did. And he read the room horribly. And that whole thing about not reading, it was, like you said, mind-boggling to me as well. But I just felt like he could have just stayed quiet, because you didn't hear Kendrick say anything, and people been trying to criticize Kendrick and J. Cole from the beginning, this whole death of George Floyd and the protests, asking like where they were and where they were at. Kendrick was out protesting, and that silenced everybody. People were asking why J. Cole hadn't tweeted anything, and then they saw he was protesting, then that shut everything up. So like, you could have just stayed quiet and kept doing what you were doing. I didn't see the need for this, and this wasn't the time for this.
Yeah, I feel like you should focus on the task at hand. If you were going to make a song about what's going on, focus on what everybody else is talking about. There's no you putting in how activists are acting or whoever. That what does it have to do with anything? Like, anybody who's a part of the revolutionary community or an activist or a protester who's been doing it for X amount of time knows that there's always going to be people that, you know, might look down on you or know more than you or whatever. That's just life. But you just say it in the song, like, bro, what does that have to do with anything? Like, yeah, nothing. Like, because of, in response to the song, prompted people to think that J. Cole was about to get canceled, which was, once again, stupid. And I said to them, I'm, you know, blue in the face, cancel culture is not real. Y'all claim to have canceled Kanye, and he's now a billionaire, so I don't know what kind of canceling y'all did.
Everybody bought the shoes.
Y'all tried to say Mel Gibson was canceled, and I saw him pop up in a movie with Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg, so whatever. It's funny because, like, I was had a conversation with another DJ on Twitter, and I was saying, like, I said cancel culture in real. She's like, well, my timeline looks like they're trying to cancel him. I'm like, that's your timeline. Like, if you clicked on J. Cole's name when he was trending yesterday, all you would have seen is people defending him, saying he shouldn't be canceled. And no artist is above criticism. You can still like an artist and still criticize them. I'm still a J. Cole fan. Like, I'm not going to – he can make a stupid song, and I can still listen to Forest Hills Drive. It's not going to change anything. It's not like, you know, with the Kanye where he's just completely gone to one side and you're like, you know what, now I don't even want anything to do with you. Like, J. Cole, he can put out another song tomorrow that's great and I'll still jam it. It's interesting because people are always saying, like, oh, people on the internet are so sensitive about words nowadays. And then when J. Cole puts out something they don't like, it's like, oh, y'all need to just let it go. Like, oh, why y'all looking into it so hard? Like, y'all gotta pick which one y'all want. Like, you can't have it both ways. But yeah, and like you said, it just wasn't a good song. Like,
yeah,
he could have said everything right in that song. I still am like, eh, nah, I didn't need this.
Yeah, I just wasn't vibing with the song itself. So, like, I kind of tuned it out. And, I mean, I said my pieces on it. Like, I saw people saying that, like, I quoted a tweet yesterday with somebody saying, J. Cole basically said, hey, sis, if you know something, you know, teach me. I'm just trying to be better. And I was like, that's not how he said it. Somebody was like, that's literally what he said. That's not literally what he said. He literally told that woman to watch her tone when talking about me or talking towards me or talking about my peers, me and my peers. And that's wrong to do.
Yeah.
To sit up there and tell a black woman, like I kept telling him, this isn't the time to be tone policing black people. Like, let them say what they want to say and how they want to say it. Don't try to sit up and say, oh, well, you can say that, but I don't need you talking to me this way. Like, nah, bro, just let it be. Like, just let it be. Sometimes the message isn't going to come out the right way. And it's just made me think about how in the struggle when it comes to black unification and black, what's the word I'm looking for? Not unity, because that's just unification.
Black revolution.
There you go. Like, the movement is very chauvinistic. Like, if you look back in the past, like, even with MLK, I mean, as great as a man Dr. King was, he and the SCLC was rather chauvinistic. They only had women doing, like, the office work or the clerical work for the SCLC. And you look at the Panthers. I know a lot of people are going to throw out Angela Davis and Kathleen Cleaver, but name another prominent woman, female member of the Panther Party. They felt that women should have been prone. Like, their job was just to stay in the background, teach the kids, cook the meals. That's all we need y'all to do. We don't need y'all to be on the front lines with us, talking and speaking. We can handle that. And that's basically, like, how black activism has gone throughout the years, is that the males should have been the prominent voice. And if a woman says something, hey, you got to watch how you're talking to me. And that's how this kind of came off to me. Like you said, it was a rather small part of the song, but that clearly is what resonated the most.
And like you said, you're right. Sometimes in the struggle, you know, black struggle, there's some chauvinistic actions. I'm not going to go into, like, deep detail about it, but I do feel like this was one of those cases of that. You know, Dave Chappelle recently put out a comedy special, 8:46, where he basically spoke about everything that's going on and George Floyd, and it was a great special, amazing special. Dave Chappelle's my favorite comedian, not of all time, but he's top five. But in that special, he didn't mention any of the women victims of police brutality, and that was kind of disheartening. I saw people talking about it, but they immediately shut down. Like, oh, still, what he said was great. Like, yeah, it was great. He spoke from a straight black man's perspective. Great, but you know, the struggle isn't just about, you know, straight black men. There's women that fall to Breonna Taylor, you know, still fighting for that. So, yeah, we just got to do better when it comes to, you know,
I think, women's struggle. I think sometimes that gets lost in it that the struggle, like you said, the struggle isn't just about us as black men prospering, but it's about all of us as black people prospering and pushing forward. And you can't forget that, or you can't alienate one demographic of it.
Yeah, and systematic racism isn't sexist. So we gotta be, you know, we gotta do better by that.
We'll be right back after this quick break.
So across the country, you know, once again, protests still going on. And, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, and I'm not talking about the organization, the movement, is at a fever pitch. You know, so I'm tipping everybody's tongue. And once again, I'm proud that the conversation is still happening weeks after it all started. One thing that's is popping up a lot in different cities is people are painting murals of Black Lives Matter in the streets. In Austin, we painted a mural on Congress. It says Black Austin Matters. Austin Justice Coalition hired black artists to help create the mural, or graffiti, whatever you want to call it. They had volunteers out there. It was great. DJ Helly Yellow was out there DJing.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like a great event. I kind of wish I would have went, you know, just to be out there taking my kids out there. Austin itself, though, was very divided on the gesture. Some people were with it, you know, and the message behind it. Chaz Moore, the boss of Austin Justice Coalition, tried to explain himself on social media about why they decided to do it. Some people were very much against it. Me, myself, I was in the middle. Like I said, the gesture was nice, and the fact that it was black artists and they had kids out there and they had a good time. I just put that stuff like that in the category of things that we're not asking for. Like, I'm not asking for a mural in the middle of the street. Of course, you know, defund the police and, you know, be treated like a human. It's kind of what we're asking for. So I kind of put stuff like this in the same category of cops kneeling. Like, bro, nobody's asking for this, man. Or, you know, companies coming out and saying, we acknowledge Juneteenth. Like, oh, thank you, but, you know, we've been acknowledging it. So that's my thoughts on it. Like, you know, I have much respect for Chaz and everything he's doing and Austin Justice Coalition. I was dope that he did it. I just didn't feel like, you know, it was that necessary. Somebody mentioned they should do it on the east side, and I'd be like, well, you know, Chaz said there's no point in doing that because we already know black people over there. But I said, yeah, but they're getting pushed out of the east side. So I think the gesture there still would have been nice.
And he also said that there is one coming on the east side. I think it's going to be Black Artists Matters, I think is what is the one on the east side is supposed to be, is Black Artists Matters. My take on it, I expressed it on Twitter. I appreciate the sentiment and I appreciate the gesture. I think it kind of got misconstrued, and it's just my own personal interpretation of it. I think with everything going on, I think now, especially in Austin, with gentrification in East Austin and all over the city of Austin, and South Austin, East Austin, North Austin, I think that is a sentiment that the city needs to hear, is that, hey, we matter. Like I said on Twitter, I think for me at least, it's something that I think that the rest of Austin needs to hear, that our history, our schools, our children, our health, our lives here matter. As much as y'all try to push us out and the way that you treat us and that y'all don't really want us here or want us to be a part of the city, we're not going anywhere. No matter how small the population dwindles to, there will be black people in Austin. And with that being said, we matter. So act like we matter. And like you said, no, we didn't ask for them to paint the mural on the street, but we here and we're not going nowhere, man. And I just think it was misconstrued. It kind of came off to me, people were taking it like the city was saying that Black Austin matters, and that's just personally not how I took it. I just took it as it's something that needs to be said, just like Black Lives Matters clearly needs to be said, because nobody treats us as if our lives matter, and also they don't treat us as if we matter. And we gonna scream that till we blue in the face too. Like, we matter, bro. We're not going nowhere. We contributed so much to this city, and there probably would be no Austin, the rich culture that is here, without us, without black people.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, like I said, you know, I do feel like people kind of took the whole gesture on, you know, and being too overly critical about it. And I'm not against it being down there. it's unfortunate though it's on Congress when there's no black business on Congress. And we can't even afford to live on Congress. I just, you know, I will say, like, to me, the Austin Justice Coalition didn't do anything wrong. It's just the city is full of it because the city has to allow that to happen, obviously.
Right.
Like, I feel like that goes to the category of the city being like, oh, we're letting y'all do these little things like this, but, like, you just gave more money to the police. Like, Adler, 2 days before the painting, came out and said that they're not going to defund the police. So it's kind of like, okay, you're letting the Austin Justice Coalition do this, which is fine, it's dope, but you're still, on the other hand, not enacting policy change that needs to happen. So that's why I guess that's what my stance is on it. Like, you know, yeah, shout out to Austin Justice Coalition, it was dope for them, but the city for letting them do that, y'all are full of it because y'all are not implementing changes to show us Black Austin matters. You'll let us paint on your streets all day, but you're not actually implementing any policy to show that Black Austin matters. So that was my stance on it.
I definitely agree with that, and people, you know, combating me on what I said, and I don't disagree that calling out and asking for the police department to be defunded and the gentrification to stop. I definitely don't disagree. Once again, if you know me, I've been talking about the gentrification in East Austin since I was in middle school. Sorry to say this, but some of y'all are late on it. I've been writing papers and speaking out about it since I was in middle school because it's been going on that long. So I don't disagree with that. Like I said, I just think it's just something that clearly this city needs to continue to hear until they decide to get off their high horse and stop feeding us crumbs. Like you said, yeah, we'll let y'all paint on the street. We'll let y'all paint murals on the side of buildings, but we're not really going to enact anything to show y'all care. No, we're going to have to continue to put it in your face that no, We matter. We here and we're not going anywhere and we're going to forever be here. So act accordingly. Treat our schools better. Treat our neighborhoods better. Treat our lives better.
Yeah, like I said, the city knows. The city knows Black Austin matters. It just doesn't want to. They just feel like there's no money in Black Austin. So that's why they're trying to push us out. So that's just, like I said, my attitude, the negative attitude towards it is for the city. Not for, you know, Chaz and Austin Justice Coalition because they're doing what they can. But the city is be the one to, you know, take up the task of actually changing. The city has this real bad problem of giving black and brown people crumbs and saying, well, here you go. We gave you something. I'd be happy with that. And like, no, bro, come on. We're asking for a full meal now. Like, and painting on the street is giving us crumbs once again.
Like, yeah, it's like Tupac said, if you see an apartment and you see this room and you see everybody in there having fun, you know, throwing money around and throwing food all in the air and all of this, like you looking inside and you like, oh, yo, man, can I come in? I want to be in. Like that's us asking, like, you know, can we have that? Can you treat us better? But after a certain while, man, you get tired of asking. Like, we asked so many times before. We asked with Velma Overton. We asked with Velma Roberts. We asked with Dorothy Turner. Like, now we're at the point where we no longer are, like, we're tired of asking. Let us in the room or we're going to kick the door in.
Yep, so once again, going back to the Austin music scene, the scene that we were part of. With everything going on in the world and, you know, black people really being in this position to really, like you said, make demands and no more asking. In the Austin music scene, what word am I thinking of? This is what happened. You don't sleep. The call for action and change in the scene is getting louder and louder, right? So people are now saying that a lot of establishments from venues to promoters to radio stations need to do more about trying to showcase black and brown artists. Jackie Vinson dropped out of Blues on the Green because she felt like there was not enough black headliners and they haven't had enough black headliners. Now Blues on the Green is doing like an all black lineup with her curating it. And so with all these, you know, with everything being said, what's going to be interesting in the next few months is if these changes actually happen. Being in this city, in the music scene, you do feel like you don't get the same type of attention or the same type of access to resources when you're like a hip hop or R&B artist. And I said on Twitter, you'll have like a white band that's been doing it for like a year, headline all the major showcases around here, be in good spots on ACL, but then you have like artists, black or brown artists that do hip hop or R&B, and they have to takes them 6 or 7 years to finally, you know, perform an ACL right when ACL gates open. It's even worse because, you know, sometimes the city will say, well, you know, we put Gary Clark Jr. and Black Pumas from here. I said, yeah, they'd get nominated for Grammys for y'all to start giving them, you know, great shows. So with everything, you know, with everything being said, I agree with all of it. Because, you know, a lot of there is a sense of, you know, that only like alt rock and stuff is the sound of the city. And it's not, you know, it's not. And there's so many great like Black and Brown artists that are just so talented, and they've been frustrated before all this, but now they're like, yeah, no, nah, we're not doing the old okie doke. You're not gonna keep giving us scraps and telling us to be good with those. So, yeah.
I recently had this discourse on Twitter with what most people believe in, I believe, was just a bot, but I had time that day. I clearly had time for it, so I didn't care who I was talking to. It could have been a 45-year-old woman in a basement in Brooklyn. I didn't care. I had time for it. And like Confucius said, you know, when you look out at the scene, the Austin music scene as a whole, you see, and I don't want to like call anybody mediocre, because to be a musician and to perform, it isn't like a mediocre thing. But the bar is set different, and the goalpost is constantly moved when it comes to Black and Brown artists in this city. In this discourse that I had on Twitter, the guy started out by saying, name two other artists outside of Gary Clark Jr. and Black Pumas who have sold out major Austin music venues. And I proceeded to do that by naming Tamika Jones and Jackie Vincent, because they both have. Like, Jackie Vincent sold out to Paramount. Like, I haven't seen a lot of artists in this city sell out the Paramount. Like, that's not an easy feat to do. And if it was an easy feat to do, everybody would be doing it. But everybody doesn't do it. And he was like, he or she was like, oh, well, that's just two. So that makes four. So Austin only has four good Black artists. And I was like, no, it means squat if you can't name the good, the successful and the talented and the great Black artists in the city. That means you haven't done your due diligence into knowing who they are. And I don't have to sit here and educate you on this, but the goalpost is continuously moved, because you want to talk about major Austin music venues, but well, Stubbs is a major Austin music venue, and we've had artists that, we had Black artists that sell that out. Mohawk is a major Austin music venue, albeit they're in hot water right now too, but we've had Black artists sell that out. We've had Black artists sell out Cheer Up Charlie. We've had Black artists pack out the 310 at ACL Live. And he proceeded to bring me, has any of those artists, you know, sold out, you know, ACL Live? Not many white artists have sold out ACL Live. So, like, that's moving the goalposts once again. Don't say that if not many white artists and have done it. And Tamika Jones said on her Facebook page that, you know, the bar, also that the bar just said different. When you're a Black artist, you have to be of the level of a Gary Clark and a Black Pumas, to where you have to be this Grammy nominated artist in order to be a headliner or for a venue or a promoter to feel like you have a real draw for a crowd. But you have white artists who don't have half the accolades that those two acts have, yet they headline and pack out and sell out and do everything, as Confucius said, in the city. They pop up on ACL, the festival, they get to do ACL Live, they get to do Stubbs, the amphitheater at Stubbs, and a Black artist has to do so much more before they can prove that, hey, I'm worth it and I can bring in the crowd. And a Black artist has to sit down and negotiate and do all of this politicking with a venue or a promoter before they get the shot. And white artists don't necessarily have to do that. So the call to action that is being made by Black artists is well within its right. Like, yeah, it's the time. And I think now is the time where we strike while the iron is steaming, piping hot.
Yeah, I agree. And it's one of the excuses we've heard, and I still see even now, is that, you know, a lot of these artists, Black or Brown artists, aren't, you know, headliners. You know, they're not ready to, you know, like you said, to bring in that draw. I'm like, you don't give them the resources to be headliners. Like, you don't know what somebody can be unless you give them the reason. And like I said, a lot of the bands I see that come and go, and because a lot of them come and go, these bands that y'all try to prop up, they come out and get headlining gigs. And I'm like, yo, y'all give these mediocre white bands headlining gigs, but then expect, like you said, a Black or Brown person to be super, super, super talented or be doing it for so long. And you're moving the goalposts. You don't give them the same opportunities to be headliners, which is extremely unfair. Even when it comes to like radio play, you have to, B, you have to be known by this. You have to be like safe to be played on the radio, like a safe type of artist. Like, oh, this artist don't seem to. They have a band with him. Like, brother, no. Like that's ridiculous. And you know, this city, what's still crazy to me, and we've been preaching this since day one of the breaks, is that this city has one of the largest universities in the world, full of white kids who love hip hop and R&B. And for some reason, this city still likes to tell them, like, yeah, you know, but yeah, we know y'all like it, but we're gonna play something else. Like, you are sitting on a gold mine of UT is a university, so it constantly changes kids every year. So you're constantly feeding, you know, new listeners, new fans, new all this, and the city is just literally just completely ignoring that because these old white guys and old white women just want to sit back and say, oh, well, we don't like that music, we don't understand it, so we're not gonna play it. But like, yo, You're stupid. For some reason, the Austin music scene is still stuck in 1983. What do you think that rock music is the way forward? Even with radio and KTX as well. We've had this discussion with people at KTX. KTX being a radio station has to find new listeners because at some point in time, the listeners we have now are going to die off, and you're not going to keep new listeners or get new listeners if you're not playing to the times. And so when a kid turns on KTX in the middle of the day and the guy here. Another Willie Nelson song. They're like, okay, you know what? Nah, I'm good. Let me just go back to my streaming services. If you talk to anybody that's black or brown in this city who's been here all their life, radio in Austin sucks. So like nobody, it was nothing to be proud of. We came with the idea for the breaks. Our idea was like, let's create a radio show that we've always wanted to hear and play and support the artists that we know are very talented that will get no play anywhere else. And that's what we've done for our shows. With the songs we play, but it shouldn't just be our show doing it. It should be other radio stations doing it. It should be other venues doing it. Jake Lloyd is extremely talented. He almost sold out Stubbs twice, and still has to beg just to be played anywhere else. Like Alicia Lani finally did ACL, but that took long enough. We didn't get funny story. We were the first. It was Alicia Lani did South by officially for the first time because of us. She could never get through. And she wasn't like she just started performing, but we had to push her through. A lot of times when we do side by side breaks, we're the ones getting those artists through. They've never been official before, and it's like, wow, you've been doing it for how long? And been doing it at such a high level. So yeah, this city really has to do better. And the call to action, like you see, I haven't heard anything wrong yet.
Yeah, me either. I haven't heard anyone really misspeak or say something that's just outlandish, just like, oh no, man, we can't be asking for that. Like a lot of the call to action is dead on point. Like I talked to an artist's manager and they were like, let's just, we need a network. When things that happen with Jackie happen, that we know who to cut out. We know that everybody is in the solidarity. We share this info with everybody that this is what this promoter is doing. This is how this venue chooses to function. And we're not supporting that. We're not rocking with them no more. Nobody's doing a show there. And we're going to show y'all that, as one artist said, that black artists in Austin is we are the culture here. And as Confucius said, we live in an age where R&B and hip hop are the number one genre. Urban music is the number one genre in the world, not the country, but in the world, not just Austin, not just Texas, not just the United States, not just North America, but the entire globe is rocking with rap. And as I said on Twitter, the days of Willie Nelson, nothing against Willie Nelson, nothing against Stevie Ray Vaughan, but the city clearly has steady tried to continue to push that sound or those type of artists to say that this is it. This is all they want to hear in Austin. These are the type of artists. This is the type of music that they're going to come out and see. Well, you don't know what the rest of the city is going to want to come out to see if you don't give anybody else a chance. Like Americana isn't the only style of music that is played here and that people want to hear, because if you go see Maylock perform, if you go see a Jake Lloyd perform, if you go see a DZ Brown perform, if you go see the Tito perform, you see all of these people packed out in the venue just to see them. If you go see Kid Jones, if you go see Mobley, you go see Tamika Jones, you see all of these people packed out to see them. That's not by coincidence. They've put in the legwork despite the city and venues and promoters and publications not really giving them the same just due that they give their white counterparts.
Yeah, and I say this, we can move on. For the scene itself too, to grow and for the city to move forward the way it needs to, yeah, you have to embrace. And I tell people, hip hop and R&B is paying the bills of these smaller indie, you know, Americana rock and alt rock bands. Like when they, at these labels, the songs we play from these bands that probably sell, you know, a couple million copies, maybe. Like hip hop and R&B is funding these bands because they're not bringing in the huge draws like the people think they are. So, yeah, man, everybody just has to give it the time. This entire city has to give it the time. So, yeah. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for our first segment of the night, Unpopular Opinion with Mr. Fresh himself.
Woo, woo, woo. All right. So we talked about J. Cole earlier and his song that got the internet riled up. And during that segment, I spoke about another artist that a lot of people are kind of waiting to hear from. And that would be Kendrick Lamar. Kendrick Lamar earlier on was photographed out in the marches in the protest in L.A., which doesn't shock me because it's Kendrick. And Kendrick has kind of lended himself to the cause musically, so it was no surprise to see him out at a protest. So this week, somebody on Twitter tweeted that, you know, they mentioned Kendrick Lamar and saying that, hey, they needed the album, they ready for the album. And the owner, Punch, the guy that runs the label that Kendrick Lamar is signed to, Top Dog Entertainment, quoted the tweet saying, "Now, y'all not ready for that." He didn't say it so eloquently as that, but he basically said people don't not ready for it and people don't appreciate Kendrick Lamar, and which I think is hogwash. So my unpopular opinion is Punch is wrong. Punch is wrong, because I know Punch saying that, I know I saw the comments on Rap Radar, I saw it on their Instagram feed, and people were under there like, "You right, Punch, nobody appreciates Kendrick, they not ready for Kendrick, they don't appreciate the artist that he is." False. False, 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 that nobody appreciates the artist that Kendrick Lamar is. We love Kendrick Lamar for being the kind of the spearhead for the Black Panther soundtrack and curating that and TDE doing that. We love Kendrick for his damn album. Like, I still contend that nothing he said on that album was groundbreaking. That nothing that he said hasn't not been said in rap before, whether it be from Mos Def, Nas, Ice Cube, Ice-T, Public Enemy. Nothing was groundbreaking, but it was an album that I believe needed to be said, needed to be made, and those things needed to be said for this generation of rap fans. So I appreciate it in that. And that album was appreciated, and Kendrick was appreciated. His Grammy performance from 2016, when he got out, when he opened up the Grammys with Black of the Berry, a very angry, aggressive song about being black and him, and also calling himself a hypocrite, was appreciated. It was very highly appreciated. The Good Kid, Mad City was loved and heralded and called an instant classic. So don't sit here and tell me that Kendrick isn't appreciated for his art and the things that he does. To Pimp a Butterfly was probably his most divisive album, but it's an album that I think everybody looks back on now and looks at as genius work. And it grew on a lot of people who didn't like it at first. And they look at it now, like I said, and they look at it as just genius work, and they appreciate the message and the sentiment that was delivered in that album. So you can't sit here and say, "Nah, we're not ready for it, Kendrick," or "Nah, we don't appreciate Kendrick," because somebody probably went off, because people went off on J. Cole. J. Cole has to deal with that himself and how he came at somebody on that track, whoever he was talking about, whether it be No Name or some other black woman. But I think people are ready and primed and overdue for a Kendrick album. What Damn came out in 2017? So, like, it's 2020. It's been 3 years, bro. Like, come on, give it to us. We know you got a lot to say from 2017. Excuse me, until now, especially with everything going on now. I imagine this album is probably going to sound more like Damn or To Pimp a Butterfly or Section 80, which I think that album is still highly slept on and not appreciated. And I still say it's better than Good Kid, Mad City. But I just don't believe, like, you can sit up and say, "Nah, we're not ready for the album because we don't appreciate the artist that Kendrick Lamar is, or the artist or the person that he is." So yeah, that's my unpopular opinion. Punch, you're wrong. And now is that time of the show where we gain a little bit more knowledge than we had two songs ago. Here is Confucius says with Confucius Jones.
Thank you for that glowing intro, sir.
You're welcome, man. I try.
Now, you know, we talked about earlier in the show about J. Cole and, you know, him not being able to read the room and singling out allegedly No Name for her, you know, attitude towards activism. So what I'm talking about right now is the importance of black women in everything that's going on. So I don't know how many years ago that was. You were there. I want to say maybe 4 years ago, a friend of mine who's an activist stayed with me. She was going through some things, and, you know, me and her would have a lot of conversations about everything that's going on. And she was probably one of the most fearless people I've ever met. Like, she was born into the revolution. That's all she knows. Like, she takes the way we take things to heart, she takes it hard, like 10 times worse. She feels directly responsible for the plight of black people in America. And so we used to have a lot of conversations about, you know, different things. We would disagree a lot. I know one time we got in a huge argument about Jay-Z and his contributions to the revolution, black revolutionaries. And she was really, like, a lot of the ideas I have now were ideas she had back then. Like, I'm completely against capitalism, and she was completely against it. And, like, you know, defunding the police, she was talking about that back then. She is not an exception to the rule. She is the rule, in a sense. That's why yesterday on Twitter, I apologized to black women, because as black men and just men in general, we do a very, very, very bad job of protecting them. We do a very bad job of giving them credit. We do a very bad job of putting them on equal footing with us. And their contribution to the struggle, it cannot be overstated as much. You have the Coretta Scott Kings, you have the Angela Davises, you have the Betty Shabazz. These are people that had their contributions to the struggle not been there, it wouldn't be what it is today. I would argue that women's contribution is more important than any other contribution. There wouldn't be a lot of things we have going on, because their roles are dual. They have to also be women in the struggle and also kind of fiend for themselves, because, like I said, we don't do a good job of protecting them. So that's why I apologize to black women on Twitter. J. Cole, like I said, the song wasn't bad. It's just, once again, you are in no position as a black man to tell a black woman what she should be doing. And it's also not their job to teach us what we should be doing. It's been going on too long, and they do so much they don't get credit for. It was black women that helped put together the Black Austin Matters mural downtown on Congress. That's who predominantly works inside Austin Justice Coalition. You see Chaz, but it's women behind him. Black Panthers famously had massive amounts of women joining, but you always hear about, you know, Bobby Seale and Huey Newton, because they were the founders. Martin Luther King's legacy was continued, and he became his birthday became a holiday because of Coretta. Once everybody knows Rosa Parks. So as far as what it comes to being a man and a black man, I know I've contributed to not doing what I needed to protect the black woman. I have a daughter, so I have a black woman. Of course, my mother's black, grandmother was black. But we have to do a better job as men to, you know, make sure that our most prized possession is taken care of, because we're doing a very bad job at it. And that's my Confucius Says.
This week for Local Song of the Week, we have Malik and his single Red. Malik is a Grammy Award winning producer who just recently inked a deal with legendary producer No ID. Now here is Malik with his song Red.
I take a shot, still can't be stopped. What is this coming? What is his name? Don't worry about nothing, I'm on my way. I got struck with passion, that's on me. I got weight put on my back by enemies. I got whispers stating who I ain't gon' be. But if they wanna reach, then let them reach. Looking for the space to clear my mind. It's approaching quick so I can waste no time. Cold red, I dream and see the signs. This is just a setup by design. See, it ain't the intro, it's just a demo. This is a window, straight to my mantle. So where's my kinfolk? Ooh, I need your hands, yeah. Raise them tenfold, let me see your hands, yeah. I'm red, red, red. Every day. I run, run, run. Every day. I'm red, red, red. Every day. this time I'm facing you. You, they told me lies, I made them true. So reprogram and press undo. Control they say they have is just a ruse. I dream of walking on the moon. Why they scared to step outside ain't nothing new. What's a hurdle, what's a level, what's a rule? When everyone you know is running too. This is what is coming to. Emotions run high, take ground from under you still. I gotta do what love would do. Self reflection say I had enough of you. But listen, it ain't the intro, it's just a demo. This is a window, straight to my mental. So where's my kinfo? Ooh, I need your hands, yeah. Raise them tenfo, let me see your hands, yeah.
Breaks Podcast is a production of KTX 989, the Austin Music Experience. You can listen to The Breaks Show live every Saturday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. This podcast is produced by Confucius Jones, Fresh Knight, and Elizabeth McQueen. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter. We are at The Breaks KUTX, and you can find more episodes at KUTX.org/The Breaks.
Our theme music was written and performed by Austin's own DZ Brown.